7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Hello, monkeys, and welcome to the Live Wild or Die podcast. I'm your host, Monkey Dan. And on this episode is our first guest on the podcast, good buddy of mine, Michael Butts. We've known each other for going on 6 years now, and we've adventured all over the West. We've climbed all over, we've ran ultra marathons, we've made up cool adventures to do locally here in the Front Range of Colorado. And I thought he'd be an awesome guest. One, he's a CrossFit coach, strength conditioning coach, personal trainer, and life coach here in Boulder at one of the arguably best gyms in the country, CrossFit Sanitas. And he's also traveled the world for about a decade, so has this very unique background of world traveler, adventurer, and fitness expert. So super psyched to hear his stories as well as get his opinions and views on different aspects of fitness. I think he's a guy I'd like to have on kind of on a regular basis and just cover some different topics and really be able to dive deep. So on that note, hope you guys enjoy and monkey on. Hello, everyone. We have a good buddy of mine, Michael Butts. We've known each other for, I was thinking about this actually on the way over here. I think I've known you for almost, it's almost going to be 6 years. 6 year anniversary is coming up.
6 years.
It's wild.
It's wild.
But Michael, we've known each other for a long time and I thought he'd be a great, he's actually our first guest on the Live Wild or Die podcast. I thought he'd be great to have on. One, he traveled for like a decade. And also, we've gone on tons of adventures together, and we were joking, or actually talking kind of seriously. We've driven all over the Western states, the Rockies, all that, and the stories this guy has while we're driving are awesome. So hopefully we can capture some of those on this recording. So thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. So happy to be here.
And you know, one story that really stuck out that I thought the monkeys would enjoy was your kind of first time climbing a peak. You came out to Colorado. You kind of maybe could start by sharing that.
Yeah, so I had been living in Omaha, Nebraska for like five and a half years. And just focusing on wrestling. And I was like the tail end of my wrestling career. And just bored out of my mind, living in Nebraska. And had a ton of energy and was like in really, really good shape, but just didn't know what to do next. And somehow I stumbled across the book Into Thin Air by John Krakauer. Awesome book. It's a story of just sort of like tragedy on Mount Everest, 1996. All kinds of key characters involved with this story, but I was just remember being really captivated by like climbing a big mountain, and this is in like 2001 or 2002. This is in 2002, and so the internet's not like huge yet.
Right.
So I remember like going to the library and like Googling like what's the closest mountain to like Omaha, Nebraska, and Long's Peak came up, as well as the Tetons, Grand Teton National Park. So that was actually my first time really discovering like those two national parks as well. Because like growing up, man, I just was obsessed with wrestling and sort of had a one sport mind. Anyway, so read this book and was kind of like super just excited about climbing a mountain. So I again looked it up, found Long's Peak was the closest one, and I started making arrangements to like figure out how to get to this national park. And so I booked a bus ticket that left Omaha, Nebraska at 11:35 p.m. and got to Denver at 8 a.m. And I had arranged this lady to pick me up. It was called Estes Park Shuttles. And she normally like would hit the airport to Estes Park, but she made like this big loop to the bus station to like grab me. And it was like four businessmen, you know, suit and ties on the bus. And then there's this kid, me. And the funny thing is too, is like 2002, man, living in Nebraska, like I didn't have any outdoor gear. So I had like, I shit you not, like Gap khakis, I had Gap khakis on. I had a Gap like wool sweater. I didn't even have like you know, those Capeline shirts that like I had like a cotton t-shirt.
Right. Right.
I had a scarf, a beanie. I bought this like mountain, what are they called? Mountain Smith backpack at like a Goodwill store. Just like those old, super old school, almost like external frame backpack. I didn't have anything really. I bought a Walmart tent that weighs too much to go backpacking. I didn't even know like what kind of food to like pack. I had like canned ravioli. I think I told you that. I had like cans of ravioli that I was like backpacking with. And like granola bars, chocolate chip granola bars, those cheap Kroger ones. Anyway, so this lady picks me up and she drives up to Estes Park. She drops off these businessmen and then she like dropped me off at the trailhead, Long's Peak. And I had no idea about like camping permits or anything. I just like walked up to the ranger station. There's a nice ranger hut there. And I was like, hey, I want to climb Long's Peak. And the guy was like, okay, great. And I was like, yeah, so I need a place to camp for tonight. And, you know, this was in the summer, like middle of July. And he was like, well, the campgrounds are full, but I can give you a backcountry permit to camp at the Boulder Field. And like, I'm like, okay. And he's like, but it's at 12,500 feet. And I'm super excited about gaining elevation because I've been reading Into Thin Air and like, you know, obsessing about climbing Everest and learning about the death zone. So I'm like, 12,000 feet, that'll do, man. And he's like, okay, but it's like, you got to be in really good shape to get there. And this is the best part of the story too. I just remember lifting up my t-shirt and showing the guy like my abs, like 23 years old. I'm just like, I was like, I think I'm in pretty good shape. And he didn't really say much. He just kind of nodded his head, writes out the permit and hands it to me. And again, you know, I think it's like, what is it, 5.5 miles to the Boulder Field or something like that. You know, you gain only like 4,000 feet or something, but I did get my ass kicked. I mean, I got this huge backpack, cans of ravioli. But the funny thing was, too, is like Omaha is 185 feet above sea level.
Okay.
So yeah. I went from 185 feet above sea level to 12,500 feet in less than 24 hours. And it was hard, man. It was really hard to do. But I made it, and I remember getting there. I set up my tent, pulled out my can of ravioli. I threw it up, like, full-on, like, altitude sickness. But I was loving every second of it because I was just, like, thinking about those guys and in the thin air and whatnot. But I didn't sleep much that night. And I remember my friend Michaela had given me these, like, 800-milligram ibuprofen. She gave me two of them. And I didn't sleep. I had this like raging headache and I'm like, yeah, altitude sickness. This is awesome. I'm like reading, you know, from what I read about, like I'm living it, man. I'm climbing Everest. Anyway, I only slept like 15 minutes the whole night. And I remember hearing these people walk by, like it was dark out and I was like, what are they doing outside? And I unzip my tent and you can see these headlamps coming up the Boulder Field. And at the time, I didn't realize it, but these were, like, the day hikers, the ones that are summoning Long's Peak, like, in a day. They start at, like, 2:30 in the morning. And this is, like, the sun's not even up yet. It's still dark. You can see the headlamps. And I zip my tent closed, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. My head hurts. I put, like, my wool sweater back on, put my khakis back on. And then finally, like, another one came by, and, like, they were really close. So I unzipped, peeked my head out, and, like, the light's starting to come up. And I'm like, it was these three guys, and I was like, hey. I was like, I'm from Omaha. Like, I only slept like 15 minutes last night. I was like, my head really hurts. And I was like, do you think I should still go up? And they were like, yeah, come with us. So I was like, all right. So they were taking a break and like snacking or something. And I got up. I remember taking a couple of bites of a bagel and I popped one of those 800 milligram ibuprofen. And I tried the best I could to follow these dudes to the top, but clearly they were in better shape than me. And they were three brothers. I remember that too.
Okay.
Clearly they were in better shape than me, but the altitude was just messing me up. But I did make it eventually, about a half an hour behind them. And it was awesome. It was totally fun. And then, yeah, I was just up there alone for about a half an hour. And then I remember sitting on the summit and these two guys, like, come over the top, just full on, like, alpine rock climbing gear. Like, they had all this stuff on them, cams and nuts. I had no idea what the stuff was at the time. But I remember, like, seeing them and instantly I just jumped up and was like, where the heck did you guys just come from? And they were like, we just climbed the diamond. And I was like, that's awesome. What's the diamond? They were like, it's that huge face right down there. And I just remember looking at all their stuff like, I want all of that. I don't even know what it was, but I was like, I want it.
Can you explain real quick the diamond in Long's Peak?
Yeah, so the diamond is the it's the northeast face of Long's Peak. So it's like 2,000-foot granite wall, one of the biggest walls in North America. But it starts at 12,000 feet and ends at the top of Long's Peak, which is 14,000 feet. So that's the diamond. And at the time, I didn't really know what it was. I didn't know what any of it meant. I just know these guys looked badass. They looked like superheroes to me. And so I remember them telling me about it. And then, I went back down, not with those three guys. I think they left without me. I stayed up on top for a while because it was like a really nice morning. And then I went down, packed up all my stuff, hiked back down to the ranger station, and chatted with the ranger for a long time. And then I found this guidebook for rock climbing on the diamond, and I bought it. It was like $10, one of those little thin ones that was just on the diamond. I remember I had it for years. I don't know where it is now, but I lost it somewhere in the moves. But I had it for years and was just trying to figure out, like, how do you climb the diamond? What do you need? All this stuff. And slowly but surely, the rest of that summer, I started buying like all kinds of rock climbing gear. But like, I bought like sets of nuts and hexes, and a climbing rope, a harness, climbing shoes. My roommate bought a harness and climbing shoes. We bought helmets. We bought all this stuff. And we were like, when I got home, I was like telling him the whole story that I just told you, like how freaking amazing it was. And then he was like, I want to climb rocks too. And we ended up getting another rock climbing book. That the 50 favorites of like North America, and we just obsessed over it, and that's how we sort of discovered also like where the Tetons were. And so I remember like for the next couple of months, we were like on the playground at our apartment complex figuring out how to belay, and like set nuts and like anchors and stuff, just traversing the like monkey bars and crap.
Whatever it takes,
dude. We had our helmets and our harnesses on in Omaha, just like feeding out slack, setting up like webbing and like crap like that around the monkey bars or around the playground. That was hilarious, dude. And then a few months later, we went out and tried to climb the Grand. Not as successful, but. But yeah, that was the Long's Peak story. I think that totally like got me hooked on just like being outside. It was such a big life changing moment for me. Just reading that book, going out, climbing a 14er. I didn't even know what a 14er was, but I loved being at altitude and suffering just a little bit.
Can you explain what a 14er is so 14er? Folks know?
Yeah, so in Colorado, there's 50-something mountains that are above 14,000 feet. So in Colorado, most of the states, they just call them 14ers. That was the first mountain I ever climbed and my first 14er I've ever climbed. Yeah, since then, I've climbed it five different ways.
Pretty awesome. Hell yeah.
Long's Peak's awesome. It's legendary.
So before that, had you done much like outdoor stuff, hiking, camping, anything like that, or...?
Zero. Oh, camping for sure. As like, from like, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the way to like 13, we camped a lot growing up. But like in Southwest Missouri, it's like on a river.
Right.
And you're fly fishing or fishing or canoeing or kayaking, some boating. But nothing like backcountry camping where you put your stuff in a backpack, hike for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, spend the night, and then repeat that the following day. Never did any of that. That was definitely my first time, and I loved it for sure.
So you did Longs. That was in July. Mm-hmm. You went back, and then
in October we went and tried to climb the Grand Teton, and that we failed miserably. Totally unprepared for technical alpine rock climbing.
So the Grand Teton, that's in Wyoming. Grand Teton National Park, Wyoming, yeah. And it's how high? 13?
13,770. Okay. So almost a 14er. But I would say significantly harder than Long's Peak.
Okay.
It's a steeper, longer approach. Definitely more technical rock climbing involved than the keyhole route of Long's Peak, which is what I did, which is basically just like a crass class 3 scramble.
Right. So then you ended up moving to Jackson Hole eventually, right?
Yeah, so went to Long's Peak in the summer, came back, bought all this like rock climbing gear. We got that other rock climbing book, started obsessing about just like my roommate and I at the time. But he had a 2-year-old son, so he kind of knew that he was trapped there, but he was living vicariously through me and knew that I was about to leave. This was my roommate from college. Anyway, we discovered the Tetons, and I told him about climbing Longs, and he was like, I'm in, like, let's go. And so we did the same thing, drove out to the Tetons to try to climb the Grand. We're unsuccessful there, but we did climb Tiwanaku, which is a 12,500-foot peak in front of the Grand.
Right.
A part of the Grand Teton Traverse. We did actually summit that. We camped illegally at a campsite that was closed due to bear activity. Got a $50 ticket for camping there. Totally had all this food on a picnic table. And we're just like, oh, hey, what's up, Ranger? We're from Omaha.
Right.
And they were like, you can't be here. And we're like, what? Why? This is closed. Dang. Here's a ticket. Bummer. I never paid that ticket either.
Well, I've actually heard this story before, but I wanted to share it with the monkeys. And, you know, what I thought was so cool about it was, I think there's probably tons of people listening, tons of people that they've read something or seen a movie or whatever, and they're inspired and they want to go do it, but pretty much no one goes out and actually like makes that change or does it. So mm-hmm. I thought that was, it was just really inspiring. I remember I've told several people about it. So you went, so that kind of got you to move to Jackson Hole. And then how did you end up, how long did you travel for? How did that kind of segue?
So, I'm in Omaha. I'm just bored out of my mind. Had these two huge summer adventures. Just looking for that, like, next thing. Needed to get out of Nebraska for sure, but sort of unsure about where to go next. But having visited the Tetons, I mean, that's God's country, right?
It's
easily one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And, I mean, I can say that having been to, like, a lot of places. I just couldn't believe how beautiful it was there. And then how the culture was exactly what I was looking for too. Just like the rock climbing, sleeping outside, climbing mountains. The culture was everything that I was looking for at the time. So I had to suffer through a long, horrible winter in Omaha where just sort of like, I was serving tables and bartending and working out and trying to save money, knowing that like come spring, I was like about to bounce. But I discovered this website called coolworks.com.
Okay.
And through that website, I secured a job at a resort in the national park, serving tables.
And that was Grand Teton?
The Grand Teton National Park. So that spring, they flew me out there. And I worked there for a summer. There, that summer, I met one of my best friends, Tyler Thompson. And he was like 5 years younger than me, like just fresh out of high school, like just super young and green, but also like hungry.
Right.
Hungry, like wanted the next big thing, wanted that big adventure. And so we would like, we'd work and then we'd just like hang out all night, like talking about like what climbing books we read or like, you know, what was the next adventure. And, once you do like a job inside of a seasonal, place like that, you sort of get in this like circuit.
Right.
Right. And I didn't know the circuit existed. I just knew I needed to get out of Nebraska and I ended up there, had this amazing summer, worked there for 5 months, made a bunch of money. Like you're in a national park. So everything you do is literally adventure at your fingertips. And, anyway, met this kid, Tyler, and coincidentally enough, like right after I read Into Thin Air, I started reading the book, The Beach.
Okay. I've never read that.
Alex Garland.
Okay.
It's an awesome book.
Okay.
Everybody knows the movie because Leonardo DiCaprio's in it.
Right.
I think the movie's freaking awesome as well. But anyway, I read the book, The Beach, and it's about this sort of young guy, sort of like same thing, same situation I was in, just desperate to get out of his like crappy job and like see the world. And he takes a holiday to Thailand. And then, of course, the book is fiction and they like go on this huge adventure or whatever. But I remember reading that book and then I just was like obsessed with Thailand. I was like, okay, like I got to get over there. I wanted like what that guy had, you know, this character in the book. So that summer, like, I kept just, like, dropping these hints on Tyler. Like, right away we became, like, really close friends. Like, went on this epic snow camping trip and, like, just all kinds of things went wrong. We were just a couple of in a national park, lucky to be alive. Just constantly making mistakes, but learning. But anyway, that whole summer I was just like, yo, dude, Thailand? Oh, hey, man, like, Thailand? You know, and then we actually discovered that there was rock climbing in Thailand.
Okay.
And that was the game changer. That's when we were like, we're going to Thailand. So we had, like I said, we worked all summer, saved a bunch of money. We bought these tickets for like super cheap, $600-$700 to fly from Seattle to Bangkok. And at the end of the summer, we went over there for 2 months. First time leaving the country, So literally, I just like went from Omaha to like Wyoming, and then my first time leaving the country, went to Thailand and Cambodia. We had a short trip in Cambodia, but it's funny, like I never left the country before. I had to get my passport that summer. And I just remember going over there with like, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to travel.
Right.
So I went over there with eight $100 bills. And my goal was to spend $100 a week or less.
Okay.
And this is, first of all, this is the dumbest thing you could possibly do, is travel with that much cash on you. But I had like, I had it splitting up. I had like this little secret pocket sewn into my backpack that I could like stash money in. I had of course the tourist belt that you stick underneath right. your waistband. I had money in that. I had money like everywhere split up so that if I did get robbed, I would like split it up. So we had 8 weeks over in Southeast Asia. We climbed for like three of those in Tonsai, which is the super famous sport climbing place. But at the time, you know, we had the whole summer to like to rock climb and sport climb and learn everything that you know, to be safe over there. We still made a bunch of mistakes, but climbed a bunch of mountains over there all summer, ended up in Thailand. But like I said, once you get involved in that traveling circuit, you start to learn like how big it actually was, because these other resorts from around the world would come to this resort and try to recruit you for the next season.
Okay.
Right?
Right. And so you're talking about like the seasonal job.
The seasonal job. Right? That's summer that seasonal, and winter okay. touristy places.
Right.
And so while I was there that summer, I had like, I had no idea what I was going to do. I didn't really care about the, like that, the future that far ahead. I just knew that like we were working, having a blast. We were going to go to Thailand and have a blast. And then, afterwards I didn't know, but there was this other resort that was there recruiting for, winter employees. And it was this resort in the Florida Keys, a private resort. I didn't know much about it at the time, but I did the interview anyway. And this girl I was kind of seeing at the time, she got a job there. And then they wanted to hire me, but they didn't know like when I'd be back. I didn't really know what I was going to do.
Okay.
They were like, well, I'll go to Thailand, have a good time, and then just, you know, like email us or call us whenever you get back. So that's what I did. Like, I remember I got back, had Christmas with my family, and then I called them like a day or two later. And they were like, yeah, we have a job as a bartender at this bar. Do you have any experience? And I was like, oh, yeah, I got tons of experience live through my teeth. Had no idea how to make anything. And they were like, okay, great. Like, when can you get down there? And I was like, how's tomorrow sound? Because I was like at my parents' house staying, you know, for the holidays and just didn't really want to be there, obviously. You know, just came back from Thailand and was like, didn't want to be like, the stuff that I saw, I didn't want to be in that wholesome environment.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So yeah, like right after New Year's, I got a ticket, flew down to the Florida Keys and ended up, you know, staying with this girl that I was seeing. She was working down there, got a job as a bartender. And then I met two more guys while I was there who, also ended up traveling the world with. And so from that summer, it ended up being 9 years of just like this seasonal job where I'd like work in the winter for like 3 to 4 or 5 months and I'd make a bunch of money because all you do is you just work.
Right.
Stockpile cash, think about the next adventure. And then when the season would end, I would try to have, by the end of the season, have like another job lined up. But if I didn't, it was no big deal. I just knew that I had, you know, $10,000 in my bank account and I'd be fine for like a little while. So then, you know, you'd book the next trip, you go to South America, you go to Asia, you go like wherever. And we did a lot of road trips, those guys and myself, where we would just drive like, I mean, you know, we'd drive like from Florida to Boston to Seattle and just see like as many national parks and cities as you can. And we'd take like 3 months to do that.
Okay.
And then by the time we'd get to Seattle, 2.5, 3 months had gone by and then we'd like hightail it to the next spot, you know?
Right.
I mean, I remember one time, I had finished this season in Glacier National Park. That was the second national park I worked in. And, you know, I picked Tyler up and we drove up to British Columbia to rock climb. We ended up climbing there for 2 weeks. But I had a one-way ticket to go to Hawaii.
Okay.
So it was like 2 weeks climbing with my bro, and then I was going to peace out to Hawaii. But while we were there rock climbing, we like got Climbing Magazine, and on the cover was rock climbing in Brazil. And so the whole time he's like, dude, Brazil. And I'm like, I'm going to Hawaii. And he's like, cancel your flight. And I was like, all right. So in like 2 weeks, I like flipped my itinerary from spending the winter in Hawaii and, you know, just doing all this like backpacking on the beach and stuff like that to going down to Brazil for 10 weeks And there we went. We were supposed to go like rock climbing and surfing. And like the first 6 weeks, it just happened to be just like partying in Rio.
Okay.
Partying in Rio, the occasional surf, the occasional rock climb, and just a lot of partying in Rio. But yeah, then ultimately we were like, dude, if we don't leave this town, we're going to spend 10 weeks here.
Right. So did you rent a place or what? Where'd you stay?
We stayed at a hostel. Okay. We befriended the people at the hostel like right away.
And okay.
They set us up really, really well. Sort of just gave us like the back half of the hostel.
Right.
Had the kitchen, had everything.
And okay.
We spent a lot of time partying with those folks. But yeah, so that whole seasonal circuit was just like, you go to this place, you'd work for 3 or 4 months. You have 2 months of that shoulder season or three months, depending on where you go next. So you travel, you just, you know, okay, I'm leaving the country or I'm going to do this road trip or I'm going to do whatever. And then you got the next thing. And it's the same thing. Just like work a bunch, save all your money, and then peace out and travel. So I did that for about 9 years.
Oh,
and then slowly towards the end, it was like Tyler got a girlfriend, went back to school, you know, Chuck got a girlfriend and like went away. Justin was like, oh, I'm going to start a company growing weed in Montana. I'm going to settle down, make a bunch of money, and then I'm going to travel full time. And I ultimately just kept doing it. And at the time, I had a girlfriend as well. And so she and I were like bombing around, doing a bunch of traveling. And then that relationship ended. And then it was like, what am I going to do?
Right.
And so I spent like 4 or 5 months visiting a bunch of friends. And then one of those friends was like, dude, come down to Denver and like, or come down to Boulder and like come rock climbing with me. And I was like, meet me in Wyoming. And he did. And then he was like, you got to come down to Boulder. It's awesome. And I was like, all right, fine. And then I just remember, the first day I was here, it was like 60 degrees in the October. And it was like, this place is freaking awesome. And I never left. I've been here for like 8.5 years now.
So what year did you move to Colorado?
That was 2010.
Okay. Okay. What, just one thing that's going through my mind is like, cause you were this high-end college athlete. You'd been an athlete kind of your whole life. What were you doing from a training perspective for that 9 years of travel? Were you doing like, what were you doing training-wise, if any?
Definitely always training. I just remember like when I would go to these like resorts, some of them they'd be in a national park and I'd have these like just these basement level gym facilities.
Right.
And I would just do these like insane sort of, they were all college wrestling workouts.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about? Like,
well, I don't.
I mean, just like super high volume, high repetition, just like full body, you know, compound movements. Like, gosh, man, hard to explain, but.
So you're not doing like cable crossovers. You're doing like squats. Thrusters.
Yeah.
Olympic lifting.
I'm running, you know, again, I'm in a national park, right? So it's like, let's say I'm running as fast as I can up this like big trail right outside my room.
Right.
And then at the top, I do like 25 burpees, or I'd grab like a huge stone and do like stone thrusters, and I'd throw it on the ground, and then I'd run back down to the room, and I'd bust out like 30 pull-ups or something, you know, strict pull-ups, and then I would just repeat that like crazy stuff in the national park. You know, when I went to Florida, it was kind of cush, so like, you know, I had like a nicer training facility, like a treadmill. So I'd crank the treadmill at like 15%, and I would try to run for like 30 to 40 seconds as fast as I could on the treadmill, just like this.
Okay.
Barely about to fall off. And then, you know, I'd grab a pair of dumbbells and do like, you know, dumbbell thrusters, like squat to press overhead, as many as I could until like it just like hurt. And then I'd put it down, bust out some pull-ups, try to run on the treadmill again. I do that kind of stuff. You know, just, you know, those high intensity training as I traveled. As I traveled globally, my best friend and I, we were really into throwing frisbee, and it was so much fun because frisbee's like sprints.
Right. They're so you're like, doing ultimate or like?
No, we would just toss the frisbee.
Oh, okay.
And they're sprints, dude. So it's like, I knew that I would throw it like over his head, it would drift like 30 yards to the right, and he'd have to sprint laterally and then as fast as he could, and he'd catch it. And we were like young and super intense, so it was always like a competition. So we played a lot of frisbee, and that's like sprints over and over and over and over again. Plus we were obsessed with rock climbing, so we were always doing push-ups and pull-ups and, you know, some sort of like core, whatever, leg right. raises, toes to bar, all that crap, man.
Right.
We just did it constantly. So playing Frisbee was like a huge thing. I also, you know, I wrestled for a long time, so we'd always just wrestle each other. We'd get in these epic wrestling bouts where it was like an hour of just like beating each other up. It was like, he was like the younger brother I never had.
Okay. Okay.
You know what I'm talking about? And so those are epic, epic wrestling matches. But, you know, lots of like running sprints, lots of like pull-ups, you know, moving my bag around, moving him around, just like whatever it took ultimately. As we traveled,
so you just kind of take advantage of the environment you're in. You would kind of utilize that to, like you said, the national park. You'd run sprints up the trails and.
Oh yeah, dude. We had this circuit in Lake Tahoe, where we had a rope. And this is like right outside of our house. There's like a part of the ski lift like went up, and it would go up like a quarter of a mile. Just to the right of like one of the ski chairs. This is in the summer. And I got this huge rope from like a farming home, like a,
okay.
you know, to like,
right.
whatever, to climb it. So we went up there and we like hung it over a tree branch, and he and I would like race up this quarter mile up this hill. And he'd always kick my ass cause I'm like a bigger guy and he was taller and skinny. But we'd get up there and then it was just many laps up we could up the rope.
How high was it?
I mean, 15 feet,
okay.
not super
okay.
high.
Okay.
But, you know, you'd climb the rope, legless, of course. Like, we didn't know how to use, like, the CrossFit foot stuff back then. It was always legless.
Right.
So we'd climb the rope, you know, and we'd, like, take these huge granite boulders and just, like, do thrusters and, like, we'd slam them in the ground, you know, stuff like that. And then climb the rope and then run back down the hill to the house. That was, like, our training regimen. Like, every morning it was, like, coffee and then just, like, all right, dude, no warm-up, just, like, you ready? Get mentally prepared for that run up that fucking hill, dude. It might have been more than a quarter mile. I don't even remember. And then you get there, you're so out of breath, and he's already climbed the rope like five times. And I'd be like, oh, give me on the rope. And then I'd rage up the rope, that kind of stuff. You know, this like, you know, outside of the Tetons, it was the same thing. We had this like mountain that we'd like run up, and then there'd just be like stones and stuff. We'd take stones and do like lateral raises, and just like thrusters, lots of thrusters. In Tahoe, we'd do, like, heavy stone deadlifts on the beach. Or, like, there'd be these huge logs washed up on the beach.
Right.
So we'd, like, sort of take them, clean them, and then push them over.
Okay.
Like a tire flip, but it's right. a huge log. You just do that over and over again. And, like, pick up, you know, 100-pound rocks. You just try to deadlift them and then drop them. Just do that, like, 30 times. That kind of stuff.
Right.
Ultimately, if we didn't have a gym membership, a lot of times, though, we just wouldn't pay for a gym membership because it was too much fun to be outside. I mean, I definitely liked throwing around a heavy weight. Like, I never really, like, turned down an opportunity to go to a gym and, like, you know, deadlift heavy.
Right.
You know, and like, I love Olympic weightlifting. You know, it's part of what I do now. And it's, like, you know, I love the opportunity to go to a gym and stack a little bit of weight on the bar. And
right.
show off for the Gumbies on the treadmill or whatever. I just love lifting heavy weight. So training indoors does have its benefit, you know, in the sense that, you know, you can lift heavy.
Sure.
For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. Well, and that's a question people get is, can I get strong, you know, specifically doing bodyweight stuff? And it's like, yeah, you can definitely get stronger, but you're not going to be able to get as strong as if you can load up a barbell. I mean, there's just, it's hard to find something that's more effective than that. What?
And the environment.
And the environment.
The environment of, like, your body is there, and you're like, I got 400 pounds on this bar, I'm about to squat this.
For sure.
And then we're going to be super psyched the rest of the day.
For sure. Well, I remember that in college. It was, I was a smaller guy compared to most of my teammates, but I would always try and lift with, well, everyone was stronger than me in general, but that always was motivating for me, and I think it made me a lot stronger for sure. What? Oh, I can't remember what I was going to ask you. What, oh, here's what I want to ask you. So those that are listening, Michael, he's a CrossFit coach, strength conditioning coach here in Boulder, one of the best gyms in the country, arguably. And, you know, I think you really think deeply about training and fitness and all this stuff. What do you think in general people are doing wrong? Or what would you say, kind of there's this, maybe things that are thought of as common knowledge that everyone thinks is correct, but you actually think might be the opposite.
I would say, like, gosh, what I see going on, like, in my environment is just, like, people not regularly, what's the word, learning new skills. Like, I don't know, they just become so stuck in the one thing that they're good at, and they just do that over and over and over again. But there's, like, something to be said about, I mean, I'm a 200-pound man. Like, I hate swimming, but, you know, we're going to do this big objective this summer, and it's like, I got to start swimming.
Right.
Regularly learning and trying new things, being, like, not good at something, and then, you know, figuring out how to do that. Like, for me, the last couple of years, it was cycling. Like, never rode a bike in my life.
Right.
And then over the last 2 years, it's like I've picked that up, and, you know, and at first it was just like, you know, you make mistakes, you suck at it, you bonk, you know, but it was like I went for it and it was super fun, regularly learning those kind of things, whether it's swimming, biking, long distance running, that right. got me out of my comfort zone, playing sports, whatever it takes, just like, and just so you're not doing the same thing. Like recently, over the last year, I started taking hip hop classes, dude. You're not.
We'll have a video of that.
You are not living life until you go to a hip hop class, my friend. That is one of the most humbling experiences you could possibly have. Just, I mean, I'm a weightlifter. I've got, you know, I don't really know how to dance. You know, drunkenly right. at a bar, I can like swing my body.
Sure.
But like, not like actual dancing. And then you go and you just, you know, you try to perform this stuff. I mean, I've been to like 12 hip hop classes over the last 6 months or something. I performed in front of 100 people.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
I crossed it at the gym.
Okay. Okay.
We did the lip sync battle.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I did a little trio routine with my boss.
Okay.
And one of my coworkers.
Okay.
You know, that kind of stuff. Like,
right.
It's great for your mind to learn those new skills. It's great for your body. It's great for your confidence. You know, your self-esteem.
Right.
But people just get so stuck into, like, just doing the same thing. I just want to get better at this. I just want to get better at that. It's like, that's great. It's important to have goals, you know, but you have to also challenge yourself in different ways.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I know I'm guilty of that. I don't like being not good at things. And, I, you know, I was thinking, too, as you're describing
this. Hip-hop class, Tuesday,
12 o'clock. Sign me up, bro. Yeah. Monkeys. We'll see you there.
Hip-hop class. So hard.
Oh, no, I had a post-grad year in college, and I took ballroom dancing, which is, I would imagine, way easier than hip hop, but it was hard.
Still
for me.
Humbling.
It's still, oh, it's dancing very is humbling. Hard. It's, yeah, I think it's very athletic for sure. And the coordination, like you said, the mental side for me was always, that was the hardest part. And as you're talking about doing all these different skills, I think one thing I've noticed with you is since you kind of have such a high level of general fitness, you're able to just kind of tilt the compass to whether it's cycling or Michael and I, we did this past spring where we did a bunch of rock climbing in Zion and we ran a ultra marathon. It was a 50K. You have this very unique ability to just kind of like rotate your compass wherever it happens to be and be quite successful at it. And that, do you think that's from just having such that high level of base training, whether it's weightlifting?
It's from the calves.
It's from the calves.
It's from the calf muscles.
I've never met anyone that gets more compliments on their calves.
Yeah, I would say ultimately just having those long, long days outside has helped me with like the endurance aspect of it.
Right.
Just having like huge days, being outside, climbing mountains, like whatever, that's helped me for sure. But not to say that it's been easy. Those two sports, running and cycling, are definitely super hard for me. And I expect, swimming will probably be as well. I'm scared to death of
right.
it.
Right. You want to tell folks what the challenge is?
The Teton Picnic. It's in the Grand Teton National Park, which is what we've been talking about. You start in Jackson Hole and you ride your bike 22 miles to Ginny Lake inside the Grand Teton National Park. You'll swim a mile across Ginny Lake. And this is an alpine lake, mind you, at 7,000 feet. A mile across Ginny Lake, and then you have to, or then you get to climb the Grand Teton via the Owen Spalding route, which is not an easy route. And that's like 7 miles up, 7,000 feet of elevation gain. And then 7 miles down, and then you swim back across the lake, which is another mile after having climbed the mountain, and then 22 miles back to Jackson Hole. And that's the objective. So that's going to be a huge day.
The Teton Picnic.
The Teton Picnic.
How did you
put a link to that video?
Yeah, I will. That's a good point. Yeah, I'll put a link to that video. How did you? Because I'm pretty sure you sent that to me. How did you find that?
Did I? No, you sent it to me.
Maybe I found it then. So in the climbing world,
it was
world,
probably from the Long's Peak Triathlon for sure.
That's probably
just scrolling
it.
All those videos.
Right. Right. You know, it's interesting here in Boulder. There's this culture of, it's kind of like one-upmanship in a way, but it's also this friendly competition in a way of just how creative can you be and how much can you do in 24 hours or how fast can you do these certain local objectives. So it's been hard. We've done, that's kind of been something we've done a lot of over the years, but it's this growing sport in a way, this kind of FKT, fastest known time, or, you know, someone, there's a local guy named Bill Wright, coach, right? He'll come up with these adventures that he basically makes up and then he posts it for the first time and then all these other guys get to go see if they can do it faster or do things better. So that's been something that's, I think, very unique to Boulder and something that's been more attractive to me from like that competition side of things.
Definitely. I love it. Can't get enough of it. Even like the super dumbed down version of like, how fast can you climb the third flat iron by bike?
Right. Right.
Like, it's so much fun, man. So much fun. Like, that is such a creative way to, like, I don't know, to work on your fitness, but also be outside.
Right.
I think.
Well, I think I talked to my microphone alone, actually my car as my studio last week, but I was talking about having that goal, how that helped, that gets you in the gym or outside to do the sprints or to use Pocket Monkey, monkey bars, whatever. How has that been something that's motivated you over the years, or have you just kind of had this internal drive? You don't really need that. You know what I mean? Like, do you like having that goal if you're a trainer, or do you think you would train the same regardless?
No, I like having the goal. Usually when I get stuck in my training, it's when I don't have that thing to look forward to next.
Right.
And I'm just like sort of waiting for the muse to be like, this would be really cool.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, for a long time, it was CrossFit. I was just like, got to get good at CrossFit.
Right.
But I found that that's a very one-dimensional way of looking at training or sport. Definitely was fun for a little while because of the friendships that I developed.
Sure.
Through competitive CrossFit. Met some just outstanding people. But again, that sort of one-dimensional aspect of I'm just doing these things over and over and over to be good at these things, that lost interest. I lost interest in that real quick after like 2.5 years or something. And then I still, you know, I love CrossFit because I love weightlifting and high intensity training, and I love applying that fitness to something outside. And then, like you said, being in the Republic of Boulder, it's like this is the mecca for crazy people doing crazy stuff.
Right.
Like the most insane athletes live here. And what I mean by insane is like the Mount Rainier Infinity Loop. Like, who comes up with that?
Right.
Who comes up with that? Who the heck is like, dude, let's do that? Because to me, that's the ultimate suffer fest. But at the same time, I'm still amazed and impressed by it.
Oh, like, absolutely.
It's just incredible.
Can you explain that real quick?
Just so I don't even know really what it is. Basically, these guys climb Rainier twice, but circumnavigate the entire mountain. So they go like up and over it, and then loop around, and then up and over it again, and then loop back around to where they came from, or something like that. So where they're climbing the mountain twice and covering every circumference of it in 60 hours.
They're climbing like probably close to 20,000 vertical feet, and I think it's over 100 miles of trail running.
It's 20,000. Yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy feat of endurance and sport.
Right, because it's multi
technical sport.
It's not just like you have to be a good trail runner. You have to know how to navigate glaciers, snow and ice, climb.
It's insane, man. And then, and ultimately, the same guys who are doing. Like I said, the T10 picnic is some local dudes from
Wyoming. Right.
But some guys from Boulder went out there and did it as well.
Right.
Or you know, like, the Orizaba Rodeo, like Wade Morris and Jason and those dudes, you know, the other guy, I can't remember his name. Like, what an insane thing to think of. The Orizaba Rodeo. There's a website for this.
Yep, check it out.
I gotta put a link on this thing because it's crazy. They fly down to Veracruz, Mexico, and there's alcohol involved in this challenge, and it's all about this like 72-hour challenge. They fly down to Veracruz, they have a margarita at the airport, they bike from Veracruz up to Orizaba, or as high as they can up this 19,000-foot or 18,000-foot volcano, and it's like 110-mile biking from sea level up as high as they can up this mountain. Then they climb Orizaba, which I think it's an 18,000-foot volcano.
Yeah, it's high.
And then they drink a beer on top, ski descent back to their bikes, and then pedal back to the airport, and then they drink another margarita. And that's when the challenge ends. It's from the first margarita to the second margarita, plus the beer on top, in as fast as you can. And it's just like, I don't know, man, I love that. I honestly have no illusions of grandeur that I would ever be able to pull that off. But I just do my own mini version of it here in Boulder. Whoa. I'm going to bike to Eldo and climb the wind tower. And I'm going to drink an electrolyte drink.
Right.
And I'm going to pedal back to my house.
But I think for a lot of folks, it's like they set the goal wrong. They'll set the goals. I want to lose weight, or I want to look sexier, or I want to whatever. And it's like, it's kind of too general to me, or it's not motivating enough. I think, you know, if your goals are more of adventure focus, or it could be a 5K, or it could be hiking a 14er, it could be going surfing in Hawaii, it could be anything, but having that more specific adventure activity focused goal, that's going to result in everything you want, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely focusing on performance first has its advantages. But I would say for me personally, like, I'm in this, like, I don't know, as a fitness instructor or like a lifestyle coach, like, I understand when somebody would look at your body and be like, I would like to look like you.
Right.
I totally get that. And it's definitely achievable, but that's a totally different style of training. I would like to say that's like bodybuilding. That's not performance.
Right.
That just means you're going to change your body composition so that you look like your peers or your role models. Whoever you look up to, you want to look like them. I totally get that. But focusing on performance first, I think, is way more gratifying, for sure.
Well, probably, and like for long-term success, I think as well, it's, you know, that this, I hear what you're saying, but I think that long-term success, it's going to be that slower, more incremental process versus this.
Yeah.
Kind of, I want to be that.
Lifestyle. Yeah, right. I get it. For
right.
Sure. Yeah, that's a tricky balance, being a fitness trainer and trying to help people understand that. Like, hey, focus on, you know, this side of it, and then all your goals will sort of happen, like, in due time. And they're like, yeah, I hear you, but I want to look like you now.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, let's figure out balance.
And I think it's understanding, too. It's like, you know, you're a great example of, you've been an athlete pretty much your entire life. So your training age is so much older. Training age, years of this intense, focused, high-performance training versus someone that they might have never lifted weights before, never done push-ups consistently before, pull-ups or anything. So that, I think, is that actually, I think, is super encouraging for folks if they're able to grasp that.
Training age?
Yeah, and understand that you have years ahead of you to improve. You know,
that's the one thing that I always try to like tell people is like, this isn't a 6-month journey. This is a 10-month journey. You need to wrap your mind around that your timeline is 10 years,
right?
Not 6 months. I'm not going to achieve. It's important to have those small term goals because that's how you break it up quarterly.
For sure.
Like, I want to do this by May, and I want to do this by October, and da da da. But ultimately, it's like, I'm going to be here in 10 years.
Right.
It's like sustainable version of like what I want to be like. You can't have the 10-year mark at the 6-month mark.
Right.
It's definitely not sustainable. That's always a tricky thing to try to explain to people, for sure. Especially in the CrossFit world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because our role models are so extreme, you know, like you see the stuff they're doing and you're like, I want that.
Right.
And you're like, dude, that's not possible.
Right.
But I will try.
Do you, if folks want to say what's up, ask you questions, what's the best way to reach out? Instagram?
303-887. Feel free to call me. I'm not doing anything tonight. Just hanging out. definitely I'm on Instagram. Life with Adventure Co. And then, Facebook, just Michael Butts.
Okay. I'll put that in the notes as well.
Yeah, if you want to talk about training or the next year, whatever.
Are you hosting anything coming up?
I started doing just sort of like these adventure trips where just trying to get people outside and show them like how to eat healthy, but also like work out when you're on vacation and have like big adventures. The idea kind of came from a friend who came from Mississippi and like had never really camped before, but like moved to Colorado and has this right. access to all this great stuff, but doesn't know how to use it yet.
Right.
And it was like, dude, I'll show you how to do that
right.
for sure. Especially if you have the spirit. Like you want it, you just don't know, right? And I've got decades of just making mistakes and learning, and so trying to take people outside and teach them those things. So, yeah, I got a trip lined up for Moab, Utah, coming
okay.
up in the late spring, and that's just going to be 4 days in Utah where we're going to do like some paddleboarding, some mountain biking, some canyoneering, rappelling, maybe some rock climbing. We'll
okay,
see.
Okay, and it's website's lifewithadventureco.com.
Lifewithadventure.com.
Lifewithadventureco.
Lifewithadventure.com.
That'll go in the notes as well. Anything else? Monkey on, everyone. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.